Welcome to the Effectuation Conference 2024 podcast show, in which each participant contributes to extend our knowledge of effectuation and entrepreneurship. I'm Vic Schiller, and in this episode, we're going to be telling three stories about effectuating your way around resource constraints. The first story, we have a highly motivated entrepreneurs, supportive network, and a great idea. So what could be missing? What could be the resource constraint? Well, you'll listen and find out. In the second story, we have excessive human capital, a lot of human capital. We have a dynamic leader, and we have a lot of entrepreneurial expertise. And everything else is a resource constraint. They have nothing else. And in the third story, the timing was perfect. They had lots of money to finance the venture. Lots of experience. They even had customers, and the business plan was solid. So what could they have possibly been missing? These organizations are in three different continents, in very different cultures, but they have one thing in common. They have a fatal flaw that could end them. So the first story comes from Japan.
Hi.
This is the first story from Japan. My name is Ryuta Nakamura, and today I'll tell you my story. Please don't hesitate to contact us. Who am I? I'm an anthroplaner. Today, I'm going to tell you the story of an anthroplaner, but I have several parallel jobs. For example, I'm a board member of a cloud service company called Cybozu, and I'm the owner of an elementary school. And we also do agriculture. We call such a way of working parallel work. We will introduce you to one of these parallel work stories in the business of photography with drones. I was at Microsoft until 2013. While I was at Microsoft, I became interested in this new technology of drones. Intrigued, I immediately bought a drone, which at the time, not many people had. Using this drone, we flew it around the house and took pictures. I spread the word about this shooting on social networking sites. And somehow, I was able to get a lot of like presses, as if people were really interested in the project. This pressing of like buttons, or all this liking, was of interest to me. We believe this represented a crazy change, and a new business will be created using drones. I quit Cybozu and changed jobs. I took a drone on a business trip. I sometimes would put the drone up in the air when I was on the business trip. Specifically, I was using the drone to take pictures on the business trip. The reason I do this is because people in the community where I travel are happy to see me. People who see this happy event will then ask me to photograph them again. When we put the filmed images on our site, we actually receive even more new requests and requests for filming again, which means that the market is gradually becoming more and more visible. What makes my shooting unique is that I shoot videos that are edited in 3 minutes and made in 3 minutes. This is an example of how these new and unique shoots of mine have generated a market. As a result, the case of an individual photography business that was born as a crowdsourcing company was recognized by the government, and the importance of this parallel work was incorporated into government policy. One of the reasons that we were able to create this new business is that there was a key timing element to this, the arrival of drones. By going to market and immediately spreading the word on social networking sites, a new business was born, a market for making images in your own unique style of filming. It creates a one-of-a-kind business that takes 3 minutes to shoot, 3 minutes to edit, and 3 minutes to complete. That's all for my story. Thank you.
Thank you. The second story is from me. I'm a PhD researcher from the Bayes Business School. My name is Vic Schiller, and I'm a PhD researcher from the Bayes Business School at the University of London. And this story actually occurs in Bulgaria. And in 2022, when Russia invaded Ukraine, Ukrainian refugees poured across the border into Bulgaria, and it was mostly women and children. There were basically three streams. Over a million refugees poured in, by the way. And there were basically three streams. One was they would just pass through the country on the way to some other country. The other one was that the government, the Bulgarian government, was warehousing women and children in the hotels on the Black Sea that were empty because the Russian tourists weren't able to come to Bulgaria. But the third stream went to a town called Plovdiv, Bulgaria, and they found a lady named Nada Ellis. And when the war broke out, Nada knew that something had to be done because the refugees were coming in, and so she put a call out to all her friends and family and everyone she knew to ask for the things that they might need. And she was an experienced entrepreneur and ran a very successful IT company in Plovdiv, and she filled up her conference room with baby diapers and blankets and canned goods, and she just knew something had to be done, and she was trying to bring it together. And then as the people started coming to Plovdiv, she realized that they needed more. And so she found this five-story, old, abandoned, had been abandoned for a year, a hospital that had been abandoned. It was in pretty bad shape, but she was able to find volunteers to help fix it up, to make it livable. And so the people had a place to stay, but she knew they needed something more. And so she provided psychological care for people, health, if they had any health issues and checkups. And the children, she got the children to do the paperwork so they could start to go to school in Bulgaria. Her idea wasn't just to warehouse these refugees. She wanted to try to bring them into society and give them something to look for. And one of the keys that Nada used is this area in Plovdiv is an area where they do a lot of light manufacturing, things like washing machines and air conditioners and auto parts. And they needed more labor. They needed more labor. So Nada went to these businesses and she found jobs for these refugees. And creatively, she found apartments and she would pair the mothers and children together, two mothers with their children together, so that one mother could work a night shift and the other mother would work the day shift. And so they could hand off how they would take care of children. But one of the problems was that the pay for these jobs wasn't enough to really afford an apartment and everything they needed to live. So Nada went to the businesses and she negotiated higher pay so that they could actually live and have a living wage. So this particular story, it helped the refugees, it helped their children, it helped the community, and it filled a needed labor gap that they had there. So. And that's the story. And so now I'll pass it off to a story from India.
Thanks, Victor. So this is November 2023. I am in Indian Institute of Technology, Mandi, a northern state in India, where after about 8 year long stint with an incubation center, which I set up, I move away from the operations and I'm figuring out the next thing I want to work on. And luckily, I met with Raj, my partner in crime for this venture, who is based in US, is visiting us in IIT Mandi, my institute, where I'm a faculty. We get into different conversations and there's an alignment on one big opportunity, which is that AI is taking the world by a storm. There are more than 36,000 AI tools available for anyone to leverage and solve problems which can be, which can take a lot of money for you. We get to thinking and we say, hey, you have MBA students specializing in data science and AI at your institute, about 100 of them, and you have one guy sitting in the US who could bring a lot of business, and you have all the knowledge and resources using which you could solve problems for medium-scale ventures who cannot really harness the power of AI because they're not as tech-savvy as the large companies. We get to thinking and see, yeah, there is an opportunity. Let's leverage this. So we put together a team of 12 students, and we say we're going to harness this student talent and build a business model around talent as a service. Raj, sitting in US, talks to medium-scale enterprises. Say, for example, there was a jeweler friend of his who said, I'm finding it hard to, you know, find a ring that fits the model and then get a studio in place and then, you know, click pictures and then put it there. Can you make this process, you know, a less of a headache for me? And we put together a team and they work out a model, and then we could actually do it. So we figured that we could actually help the enterprises, medium-scale enterprises, do a lot of content development, content curation, and content management using AI. And see that the AI world is changing so fast that it is hard to have expertise on AI. There's so many apps out there. You need to have, first of all, expertise. I mean, prompt engineering is difficult. You can't just keep up with it, one. Second, you need to hunt the right AI, which tool to use, which is more precise tool, more accurate tool. So AI expertise, AI hunting, AI precision, and you know the insights, which one is better and which is more proficient, and combining all those tools to bring out an output which can actually benefit a medium-scale enterprise. Likewise, we had another client in the US who would say, I have a co-work space, there are tens of startups who could really benefit from this. And we have a business model there. And he starts sending clients to us, and we have a group of students who are delivering on it. And client one, client two, all is going well. And then there are exam season, midterms, and the students disappear. We have a pipeline of clients. We say, March, this is March 2024. By the end of the month, we are going to have 20 to 25 queries done in this month. And March mid, we have midterms, the students disappear. And we are shocked. Our whole business model was based on talent as a service. And the talent suddenly is, it was available abundantly, 100 students. We've just picked out of a competitive process 12, and now they are not there. Then they come back after midterm, we hold out the clients for a little bit. And then there was a medical emergency on campus, chickenpox outbreak. What do? Some kids get sick, others have to rush home, and again, the clients are waiting. Now, this time we got to thinking and we said, hey, we have some decisions to make. This is amazing opportunity. We're all thrilled about it, but I need to go full time on this, or we need to find more students whose availability is not correlated so that we can actually leverage this opportunity. And that's what we're grappling with right now. We need to decide whether with my opportunity cost of being a professor, giving that up and taking up a venture makes sense for me. Does it make sense for me to take the plunge? Although it's great, the timing is amazing, there's opportunity, but how do we solve this problem? So I'll let you know how it pans out in future. Victor, thanks. Yeah. Back to you.
Thank you. So you just heard three stories, one from Japan, one from Bulgaria, and one from India. And some of the three common themes that were in these stories, first of all, was timing matters, taking the plunge, and effectuating around the impossible. And I just wanted to thank you guys for telling your stories. This was Vic Schiller hosting this podcast. And this is the series of podcasts is available on podcast platforms, effectuation.org, and podcast entrepreneuriat, audencia.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.